Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Larry Gent from the firm of Williams & Gent in Bozeman, Montana. I'm CJA panel counsel for Mr. Rodriguez. Mr. Rodriguez's appeal this morning presents a categorical challenge to the sentencing guideline that states that when a person has been prosecuted as an adult for an offense committed while they were chronologically a juvenile, so if they're prosecuted as an adult, that's treated in the career offender guidelines, even though if the local prosecutor decided in his or her discretion not to prosecute them as an adult, it wouldn't count. And that's the issue in the case. And what happened with Mr. Rodriguez as a 17-year-old...
In other words, what, we don't take into account the 17-year-old conviction?
That we don't take it into account. And, Your Honor, in the guideline, there's a specific application note that deals with this. It's actually application note one that deals with the issue and deals with that. So,
the guideline that we're talking about is 4B1.1, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the guideline that establishes what a career offender is. Now, under the guideline, there's no doubt that Mr. Rodriguez committed this offense when he was an adult and that he had a predicate offense, two predicate offenses. The first is a drug offense committed in Yellowstone County, but the one at issue is a conviction as a 17-year-old where he, along with another fellow named Nava, went into a bar in Billings. Nava starts a fight, Emily breaks out, and Rodriguez basically attacks and kills. The other fellow eventually dies, another man. The local prosecutor in Billings determined that he should be prosecuted as an adult, and that conviction happened in 1979. But through the course of the proceedings, and he got a 40-year sentence, it was reduced to 30 years, but he got revoked several times, so it happened within the 15-year window, which is another criteria of 4B1.1.
Now, what about the application note describing prior felony conviction, which is a conviction for an offense committed prior to age 18 is an adult conviction if it's classified as an adult conviction under the laws of the jurisdiction?
Yes, that's right, and we don't dispute that.
Doesn't that negate your argument?
No, Your Honor, because that's the whole point of Kimbrough, of Spears, and the other thing. And we talk about taking a categorical approach, both interestingly enough, under the Eighth Amendment jurisprudence, under the juvenile cases that have recently been decided, like Graham versus Florida, and under the guidelines, 18 U.S.C. 3553, looking at how the court should sentence people. And the question before the court is it right in a guideline rubric that even though the guidelines are now advisory, the cases overwhelmingly say, for example, in Ringgold, this court said that although Booker had rendered the guidelines advisory, it didn't extinguish an object of ensuring nationwide consistency. Gall uses the term again, nationwide consistency. And, Your Honor, in this country, there is a categorical inconsistency about how we prosecute people as juveniles versus adults.
Let me ask you a question. So the district court correctly calculated the guideline application, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no quarrel about that.
No, Your Honor.
And when the district court got to 3553A factors, he could have. Right? He wasn't required to. He could have.
He could have.
He could have varied from the guideline range on the basis that this conviction that you're concerned about was committed when he was 17 years, when the defendant was 17 years old, right? He looked at everything, and he said, in this particular case, I'm not going to do that. Why is that an abuse of discretion?
Your Honor, I don't think that's an abuse of discretion in his individualized look at Mr. Rodriguez as an offender. What I was arguing before the district court, and I argue today under the statute, that it is wrong as a matter of law to treat it. Basically, I'm challenging application note one.
You're challenging the constitutional validity of application note?
I'm challenging application note one simply because of the fact it leads to inconsistency, and it leads to inconsistency.
What's the legal foundation for that argument, the Eighth Amendment?
The Eighth Amendment was raised at the district court.
Well, I'm asking you now, what's the legal foundation for that argument?
It's 18 U.S.C. 3553.
Well, I just mentioned 3553A.
But the courts have looked at those categorical guideline things that did not make sense, and the classic example is the 101.
I don't understand. Your argument is you're arguing that the judge should reject the policy statement reflected in the applicable application note, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
It leads in disparities.
Because it leads to disparities.
Right. So you presented that argument to the district judge.
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
And he didn't buy it.
No, Your Honor, he didn't.
Was he required to buy it?
I think in this case he is, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. Because it's exactly the same case raised in Kimbrough about the 100-to-1 cocaine ratio. Because in that case, the courts, I believe, have it's exactly the same issue. How's that different, that one might ask, from the Sentencing Guideline Commission later, I think, went to a 20-to-1 ratio, but the crack cocaine guideline led to such a disparity that it vitiated the aims of the statute, which is to gain consistency and to not have disproportional punishment and all the other things under the statute that I won't go into right now. And that's my point, is that from one state to the next, whether a person is prosecuted as a juvenile or not depends on the statutory rubric and on prosecutorial discretion. And that's why I think that's wrong, and I think that's why it leads to an inconsistency, a categorical inconsistency, in the way this application note one can be applied from state to state.
Part of the rule relies on the defendant's conduct.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
You excluded that from your list, right?
Part of the rule does rely on the defendant's conduct. That is, in this case, we have, I think I know where you're getting, Your Honor, that we have no quarrel with the fact that his criminal history is a 6. In other words,
the nature of the offense is narrow.
Yeah, the nature of the offense in this case is that he was convicted of 2 drug sales is what he was convicted of. And so what happened in this case is, had Mr. Rodriguez been a 6 and got sentenced under the amounts, he would have gotten 130 to 160 months, and because of the career offender enhancement, his ultimate sentence was 300 months. So it does make a difference, but not because of the criminal history, but solely on the application of 4B1.1. If the court has no other questions, may I please reserve the balance of my time?
You may do so, certainly.
We'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors. Leif Johnson for the United States. Your Honor, I think that the puzzle that we're trying to put together here really has to do with the question that Judge Paez asked, which is, was the district court required to buy that argument? Obviously, disparity, if it exists in any case, is certainly a factor that the district court needs to consider. And it did. That issue was raised with the district court, and it was considered. It's in the sentencing transcript record, pages 23 and 24. The district court didn't buy it for a lot of good reasons. This is a defendant who has, as we've said in our brief, a lengthy criminal history, a recidivist past, and some real problems just dealing with society in general. So the district court had a number of reasons other than disparity not to vary from the guideline. And I think that the argument that Mr. Jen is making really here is that in every case that the career offender designation is given for a juvenile or an offense committed by a juvenile, that gives rise to disparity. And I think our response to that is, well, Be that as it may, disparity is only one factor among many. And this court has cautioned the district courts on a number of occasions not to place all undue emphasis on one factor over the others. And I think the best case that we've cited in our briefs on that issue is the Treadwell decision from last January, where this court said, you know, even if we were to agree, just like in this case, that there's a disparity here, the district court had a broader task. And certainly that was the district court's task here, and it was procedurally sound. And from a larger standpoint, it was substantively reasonable. I don't think the argument has been made, Judge Paez, that there is a constitutional infirmity here. I think this is, as far as I can see from the briefs, an issue of a weighing of the factors. And I am not aware of a case where this court has said in any published decision that the district court has to place the weighing of one factor over another. And that's what the defense and that's what the appellant here is asking for. If the court has no further questions, I will cede the rest of my time.
No further questions. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Gent, you have some reserve time.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. First, on the issue of disparity, true, this court has said that the court shouldn't unduly weight at one factor, but in fact, if you look carefully at the opinion in Carty, that a disparity has a special light in this galaxy of sentencing factors, and if you read the opinion in Carty, I believe you'll see that. And in this case, the implication that in every case that we're arguing that application note one should be rejected is exactly right. I'm arguing for a categorical exclusion on application note one. And I think if the court looks at the reasons that juveniles are different under the Eighth Amendment, although it's not truly an Eighth Amendment case, defendants have had tough luck on recidivist sentencing statutes and arguing the Eighth Amendment. But we look at the Eighth Amendment jurisprudence about why juveniles are different. The fact that they're not fully developed as human beings, that they're subject to peer pressures, that
the person... This is not punishment for the prior crime. The prior crime punishment is being applied as an addition to adult conduct.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's not punishment for this, but the consideration of that juvenile offense some... I guess it would be 30 years later, in 2009, seems at least to me to be inconsistent with the goals of the sentencing guidelines. If we're looking for a uniformity between courts, if we're looking for consistency, quote, nationwide consistency that the court emphasized in Gall, and that's why the defendant asked for this relief.
Very well. Thank you very much, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision.